Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 109.
So Janeway kicks things off with immense resources. We're talking a huge army, 200,000 troops.
Yeah.
And his strategy, guided by Shahuba, points straight at Nanan. You really have to understand why Nanan was the first big prize.
Yeah, it wasn't just another city to tick off a list. Nanan was basically the regional bank. It held enormous reserves of money and, critically, grain. Jiang Wei wasn't planning a quick raid. He was aiming for a deep, sustained push into Wei territory. And for that, you absolutely need logistics nailed down fast.
And he also needed, well, a way to tie up Wei's defenses on the flanks, right? Mm-hmm. Keep them busy. That's where the wild card comes in, the Chengqing Bidang. Jiang Wei uses diplomacy, promises of silk and gold, basically secures a deal, and gets 50,000 Qiang troops, led by this general Yi Shexie, to put pressure on the Longxi region. It's a really layered initial strategy. Pretty clever.
Oh, very. And Wei sees the threat immediately. They deploy Sima Nao as the great commander, but the guy they send to the front line, the four vanguard, Assistant General Zhu Ji, he's the immediate problem for Xu, known everywhere for just fearless aggression.
And Xu Ji absolutely lives up to that reputation right out of the gate at Dongting. He just charges in, defeats Xu leaders Liao Wei and Zhang Yi one after the other, forces a Xu retreat of over 30 lines. That's what, about 10 miles. He's got momentum. He's confident, aggressive.
And what Jiang Wei does next is, well, it's quite remarkable. He basically weaponizes Xu Zi's own confidence. The source material really hammers this point home. Xu Zi is exceedingly brave, almost, you know, reckless. So Jiang Wei doesn't try to match his force head on. Instead, he sets up this irresistible lure.
I'm struck by that detail. Xu Zi had just routed Liao Hua and Zhang Yi.
Yeah.
These specific guys. Did Jiang Wei anticipate that immediate, maybe inflated sense of confidence?
I think absolutely. The trap feels tailored to exploit not just the man's confidence, but also Wei's institutional memory, their past experiences. So Jiang Wei sets this layered deception. First, the classic feigned retreat. Second, they scatter iron caltrops, set up deer horns outside the camp. Looks like they're digging in for a long, tough siege. And that makes the next piece of information seem incredibly urgent.
Right, the crucial bit of misinformation. The psychological bait, this rumor spreading that Xu forces were using those legendary wooden oxen flowing horse carts, moving supplies behind Iron Cage Mountain. Why that specific rumor? What was the significance there?
Because Wei had scored major victories before by cutting those exact kinds of supply lines used by Xu. It was a known vulnerability. Jiang Wei knew mentioning those famous carts would trigger an almost automatic, high-priority response from Sima Zhao. Cut the supply line now. It's like strategic judo. You know, using the enemy's own past success against them, setting them up for failure based on what worked before.
And Sima Zhao totally bites. Immediately tells Yu Zi, take 5,000 men, go cut that supply route. Yu Zi rides out, intercepts this tiny decoy force, like 200 soldiers, maybe 100 carts, nothing. But he immediately splits his 5,000 troops. Half stay back to guard this tiny bit of captured grain. The other half pursue the fleeing decoy group. Was splitting his forces the real fatal mistake, or was that fire trap just so devastating it wouldn't have mattered?
Well, splitting the forces definitely didn't help. He diluted his strength for practically nothing. But the main error, I think, was losing situational awareness. Pure tunnel vision. He chases for barely 3 miles, then bam, his path is blocked by those decoy carts in a narrow pass. As his men try to clear the way, fire just erupts. Both sides of the pass. It's a perfect bottleneck fire trap. No escape.
Okay, and here's where it gets really interesting. Zhu Ji is scrambling, trying to escape the flames, a bottleneck. And who springs the ambush from the left and right? Liao Hua and Zhang Yi, the very generals he just routed, they were waiting, perfectly rested.
Exactly. Zhu Ji fights like mad, but between the fire, the narrow pass, the smoke, the ambush, and probably sheer exhaustion from the chase, his strength just collapses. He tries one last desperate attempt to break free, but runs straight into Jiang Wei's main force. Jiang Wei himself unhorses him with a spear thrust, and then Zhu Ji is just overwhelmed by the surrounding troops, killed right there. An unstoppable general, stopped cold by lies about logistics.
The momentum just swings completely. And Xiaoba, seeing this massive opening, he moves fast. Uses the captured Wei uniforms and flags, dresses up Xu soldiers, launches a surprise attack from within Sima Zhao's main camp. Sima Zhao thinks it's Xu Ji returning victorious, opens the gates, and suddenly the Wei commander himself is in a total panic, forced to flee for his life.
Sima Zhao does flee the ambush, yeah, but Jiang Wei herds him perfectly, forces him to retreat up Iron Cage Mountain, and now the geography itself becomes, well, the main character in this part of the story, the mountain. Yep. It has only one treacherous path up, Everywhere else, sheer cliffs, 6,000 Wei soldiers are suddenly trapped on top.
And the immediate crisis is just brutal.
Right.
Water, there's only one spring up there, and it holds barely enough water for maybe 100 people, let alone 6,000 men and their horses. Sima Zhao, having just escaped one trap, finds himself in this inescapable natural prison. He's convinced he's going to die there. The text even emphasizes this with a poem, comparing his situation to, like, famous historical moments of doom. Pang Guan at Maling Path, Xiang Yu at Jilishan, dire stuff.
Right. And this is where the story pivots, doesn't it? From pure strategy to something more like faith or fate. His advisor, Wan Tao, reminds Sima Zhao of this historical figure, Geng Gong, who apparently prayed for water in a similar tight spot and got it. Sima Zhao, probably feeling he has nothing left to lose, follows the advice. He prays to heaven, basically says, you know, if my mission isn't over, give us water, save these men.
And incredibly, the spring responds instantly, dramatically. The text says it gushes forth inexhaustibly, enough water for all 6,000 men and their horses. It completely saves the trapped army, which flips the situation again. Jiang Wei, down below, thinking he just needs to wait them out, suddenly finds the enemy's position is totally sustainable. Indefinitely. You go from certain victory for Shu to this intractable stalemate, all because of a sudden gusher of water.
It's an amazing turn. So while Sima Zhao is, let's say, saved by apparent divine intervention up on the mountain, the wider strategic game is still playing out down below. This involves General Guo Huai and his advisor, Chen Tai. Guo Huai hears Sima Zhao is trapped, and his first instinct is probably, we have to rescue him.
Mm-hmm.
But Chen Tai steps in with this piece of really brilliant but pretty ruthless, cold calculation.
He argues against rushing to rescue Sima Zhao. Wow. That must have been shocking advice for a commander to hear, prioritizing the bigger picture over the life of the great commander himself.
Absolutely, but it was probably the necessary calculation. Chen Tai points out that Jiang Wei's real target isn't necessarily Sima Zhao himself, it's Nanan. And who's heading towards Nanan? The Chang forces. Chen Tai argues that rushing to save Sima Zhao directly would leave Wei's rear flank totally exposed. They could lose Nanan, lose those vital supplies, so the priority shifts. It's not about saving the commander anymore, it's about securing the supply chain. Ironically, the very thing Jiang Wei tried to bait them with earlier.
Okay, so the immediate threat becomes the Qing King Medang and his forces, and Chen Tai comes up with this ultimate high-risk, high-reward betrayal plot. He pretends to defect, takes 5,000 men, goes to the Chang camp, puts on this whole show weeping, claiming Guo Huai tried to kill him, builds trust instantly.
Medang totally falls for it, trusts him, and agrees to Chen Tai's plan, a joint night raid on the Wei camp. But here's the clever part. Chen Tai makes sure the Chang general, Yihi Shouj, leads the charge right at the front, while Chen Tai's supposedly surrendered troops hang back safely in the rear.
Oh, no. So the poor King General Yihi Shouj rides confidently towards the open Wei camp gate.
Yeah.
And just plunges straight into a massive hidden pit trap, falls in the text as he shouts, woe is me.
Yeah.
The ambush is just devastating, wipes out the Chang front line instantly. Yihi Shouj actually commits suicide right there in the pit, and Adang the king is captured quickly.
We've just seen, what, three perfect back-to-back reversals? Shu traps and kills Shuji. Wei survives their own trap by sheer luck or maybe divine intervention. And then Wei sets this devastating counter trap, completely neutralizing the Chang alliance Jiang Wei worked so hard to build. It's almost dizzying trying to keep track of who has the upper hand.
And then comes Guo Wai's political masterstroke. He doesn't execute the captured Chang King Medang. Instead, he praises Medang's former loyalty, reminds him of his status, then frees him. He uses Medang's shame over the defeat, the loss of Yihe Shouj, to convince him to lead his remaining king forces against Jian Wei's siege at Iron Cage Mountain as penance. He basically turns this defeated enemy into a loyal, motivated spearhead, a Trojan horse.
It's brilliant, turning a massive liability into an immediate asset in real time. So Medang approaches the Shu camp, seemingly as an ally returning. But hidden among his king troops are lots of disguised Wei soldiers. When Jiang Wei and Xia Huba come out to greet their supposed ally, the hidden Wei forces attack instantly. The Shu army, caught completely off guard, just scatters. Jiang Wei himself is forced to flee, losing his weapons in the chaos. All he has left is an empty bow case.
And this chaos leads us straight into the campaign's most legendary moment, doesn't it? The duel of wits during the retreat. Jiang Wei is essentially unarmed, fleeing towards the mountains, pursued relentlessly by Guo Huai, who sees the Shu general as defenseless, just carrying an empty quiver.
So Jiang Wei pulls off the famous empty bow ruse. He keeps raising his empty bow, pulling the string, making that sharp snap sound. Guo Huai, reacting instinctively, expecting an arrow each time, keeps dodging, flinching, slowing his pursuit, until he finally realizes, wait a minute. He's unarmed. He gets angry, stops dodging, hangs up his spear, and gets ready to use his own bow.
Guo Wai thinks he's got him now. Logic dictates he has the advantage, the weapon. He knocks his arrow, takes aim, and fires. I mean, the sheer audacity of what Jiang Wei does next is just unbelievable. He dodges the arrow coming at him, somehow catches it in midair, and instantly knocks that same arrow onto his own empty bowstring.
It's incredible. Guo Wai has that momentary lapse thinking he's won the exchange, and Jiang Wei just turns his own attack back on him. He fires the arrow, the very arrow Guo Wai just shot straight back at Guo Wai's face, strikes him. Guo Wai falls from his horse, badly wounded, and the sources say he later dies from that specific wound. How do you know, personally, when your dynasty is effectively finished? For Cao Fang, it starts with his, well, his daily reality. Which just sounds pretty grim.
Oh, it was pure intimidation and really deliberate. Sima Shi knew he had to make a show of force.
How so?
Well, to crush any potential dissent before it even starts.
No.
Power had to be seen.
And the big one was him carrying a sword into court. Right?
Exactly. I mean, just imagine that. In that context, bringing a weapon into the emperor's presence, it's a massive violation of protocol, of dignity.
It's basically him saying, I'm not your subject anymore. A daily reminder.
And Cao Fang got the message loud and clear.
Yeah.
The novel says he was constantly trembling.
Yeah, trembling and feeling like he had needles in his back whenever Sima Shi was around. Just sheer terror.
It sounds absolutely paralyzing.
So what does the poor guy do? He actually gets down from the throne to greet Sima Shi, a minister.
Unbelievable. And Sima Shi just mocks him for it, tells him it's unnecessary.
The disrespect is just wow. But incredibly effective, obviously.
And it didn't stop there. It quickly went from disrespect to Sima Shi just taking over completely, functionally, anyway.
How did that work in practice during court sessions?
Well, officials would present their business, you know, the usual court routine. But Sima Shi, he just ignored the emperor entirely.
So he was just there?
Pretty much. Well, Sima Shi was self-judging every single decision, the text says. He cut Cao Fang out of the loop entirely. The emperor was just decoration, silent figurehead.
And then just to rub it in, Sima Shi makes sure everyone outside the palace walls understands who's boss too, right? With his entourage.
Oh, yeah. No subtlety there.
Yeah.
He leaves the palace with thousands of guards, horsemen. It's green military power.
Yeah.
Absolute power, not just bureaucratic influence.
Okay, so if the military's back in the region, the emperor's basically got no cards left to play.
Well, almost none. Which leads us to the desperate measure, doesn't it? If
yeah.
he's cut off politically, what's left?
Has to be a secret plot, a coup from the inside.
Exactly. Cao Fang arranges this clandestine meeting. It's in a back hall, super secret, with just three guys he thinks he can trust.
Let's see, that was Grand Marshal Xia Huihuan, Chancellor Li Feng, and Grand Master Zhang Ji. And Zhang Ji is the Empress's father, right?
That adds another layer of intimacy and risk. And the meeting itself, it's really emotional. The book says Cao Fang is actually crying.
Why? What's he saying?
He tells them Sima Shi treats him like a child, like he's nothing, and treats the officials like grass reeds, utter contempt.
And Xia Huihuan adds his own story too, doesn't he, about his uncle?
Yeah, he brings up Xiao Huba, his uncle, who had already fled to the rival state of Shuhan specifically because he was terrified of the Sima brothers.
So it frames this not just as political, but personal. Like Sima Shi is targeting the whole Cao family line. It becomes a matter of duty, almost.
Definitely. And the urgency, the secrecy, it leads to this incredible detail. Yeah. They need an imperial edict, right? But they're in a back room. No proper materials.
So Cao Fang, he bites his own finger.
Bites his finger and uses the blood to write the secret order.
On what?
On his own fancy undershirt. A dragon phoenix undershirt, the text calls it.
Wow. Writing a secret decree in your own blood on your underwear, that's commitment. It perfectly captures the desperation, doesn't it?
It really does. It shows he believes this is the only way. But then, maybe remembering history, Cao Fang warns them, be careful.
What does he reference?
He brings up his own ancestor, Cao Cao, and how Cao Cao executed Dong Chang when a similar plot leaked out back in the Han Dynasty days.
History repeating itself, potentially, but Li Feng, one of the conspirators, he kind of brushes it off.
Yeah, fatally overconfident. He thinks their plan is much more secure, which leads directly to the next bit.
Disaster strikes immediately.
Literally moments after leaving the emperor, holding this blood-written shirt, they walk straight into Sima Shi.
No.
Yes. And he's not alone. He's got hundreds of armed guards with him.
You couldn't make it up. The timing is just catastrophic.
Absolutely. So, caught red-handed, basically. Huh? What do? They try to bluff their way out with flattery. Like extreme flattery.
What's their cover story?
Li Fen claims they were just with the emperor discussing history. You know, the ancient Xia, Sheng, and Zhu dynasties.
Okay.
And get this, they supposedly compared Sima Xinyi to the most revered ancient regents, Yi Yin and Duke Zhu, like the ultimate paragons of loyal service.
Wow, laying it on thick, but Sima Xinyi doesn't buy it for a second, does he?
Not at all. He cuts right through it, coldly dismisses the flattery.
Why? Why wouldn't he just accept it?
Because he knows what they really think. He says something like, "You don't think I'm Yi Yin, you think I'm Wang Mang."
Oof. Wang Mang, the big usurper who overthrew the Han dynasty temporarily.
Exactly. Or, he adds, maybe they think he's the tyrant Dong Zhu. He's basically saying, "I know you just accused me of planning to overthrow everything. High treason."
That comparison alone basically confirms their guilt, doesn't it? But how did Sima Xinyi know, just standing there, how did he see through the flattery so fast?
It's a brilliant narrative detail. He points to their eyes.
Their eyes?
Yeah. He says their eyes are still red and tear-stained from the emotional meeting they just had with the emperor.
The physical giveaway. The emotion betrays them.
Precisely. And at that point, Xiao Huxuan just snaps. He drops the act entirely and just yells at Sima Xinyi, calls him a plotter, accuses him of planning usurpation right there.
So the pretense is over. What happens next? Immediate violence.
Instant chaos. Xiao Huxuan actually tries to punch Sima Xinyi.
Really? Against hundreds of guards?
Yeah, pure desperation. He's seized immediately, of course.
Yeah.
And then they search them.
And they find?
The blood-written undershirt on Zhang Ji. Game over.
The evidence is undeniable. What's the sentence?
Swift and utterly brutal. Sima Xinyi orders all three of them executed immediately.
Oh.
By Yao Zhan, waist chopping in the public market square.
Oh my God. That's horrific. Not just execution, but that specific method.
And it gets worse. He orders the annihilation of their entire clans, all three families, wiped out.
We need to pause on that. Waist chopping, wiping out whole families. This isn't just punishment. It's state terrorism, isn't it? Designed to paralyze anyone else thinking of opposing him.
Absolutely. Pure, unadulterated terror. The narrative even adds this grim detail that the men kept cursing Sima Xinyi until guards knocked their teeth out. Just brutal.
Okay, so the conspirators are dealt with horrifically. Sima Xinyi doesn't stop there, though.
No. He marches straight into the inner palace.
Yeah.
He needs to confront Cao Fang and the Empress.
And the Empress Zhang, her father was just executed.
Right. Apparently, she was just talking about the risks of the plot being discovered when Sima Xinyi bursts in. Talk about timing again.
What does Sima Xinyi say to the emperor?
He uses this cold political logic.
Yeah.
He basically throws their earlier flattery back at them, the Yi Yin comparison. He says his father, Sima Yi, elevated Cao Fang to the throne, and he, Sima Xinyi, served him faithfully.
Playing the loyal servant card?
Exactly. Then asks why the emperor turned this kindness into hatred. Cao Fang just completely breaks down, apparently. Kneels. Swears the plot wasn't his idea, that he was forced into it.
Does Sima Xinyi buy it? Or does he just execute him too?
He gives the emperor a reprieve, yeah. For now anyway. But the empress, she's not spared.
Why her?
Because she's Zhang Ji's daughter. Guilty by association. Sima Xinyi orders her execution.
How is she killed?
Strangled. With a white silk cord at the east gate. It's devastating.
Yeah.
Wipes out another potential focal point for Cao loyalists.
And the narrative points out the irony here.
Yeah.
Connecting it back.
Yes, explicitly. There's a poem inserted that basically says, you know, Cao Cao bullied the widows and orphans of the Han dynasty he overthrew.
And now, 40 years later?
The same thing is happening to his own descendants. The wheel turns is the message. Historical retribution.
Okay, so the plotters are dead. The empress is dead. The next day, Sima Xinyi shifts gears, doesn't he? From sheer brutality to political theater.
Right. He needs to legitimize what he's just done. So he gathers all the court officials.
Why bother? He clearly has all the power. Why not just declare himself emperor or regent for life?
Because appearances matter. Legitimacy, even if it's paper thin, is crucial for stability. He needs to frame himself as a savior, not just a ruthless killer.
So what's the official story? The pretext for deposing Cao Fang.
It's all about morality. Cao Fang is suddenly accused of being dissipated and immoral.
Like what?
Hanging out with singers and prostitutes, neglecting his duties. Sima Xinyi claims he's even worse than Lu He of Changi, this Han emperor who was famously deposed for being unfit.
Ah, setting a historical precedent. And he uses other precedents too, right? to justify his own actions.
Yes, this is key. He claims he's acting just like the famous ancient regents Ye Yin and Huo Guang.
The ones the plotters tried to flatter him with.
Exactly. He's co-opting their failed flattery. These were figures revered for deposing unfit emperors to save the dynasty. So Sima Shi is basically saying, I'm not a usurper. I'm doing my duty to preserve the state. It's a brilliant, cynical piece of political maneuvering.
Okay, so he's made his case, however flimsy. Now they need a new emperor. Who gets picked?
Sima Shi initially suggests the Prince of Pengcheng, Cao Chu. But the Empress Dowager steps in.
She objects.
Yeah, she argues it's not the correct line of succession based on seniority. She proposes someone else, Cao Mao.
Who's Cao Mao?
He's a grandson of Cao Pai, the first Cao Wei emperor, son of the Prince of Donghai. And crucially, the Empress Dowager praises him as being humble and yielding.
Humble and yielding sounds like someone who won't cause trouble for the regent.
Precisely.
Huh?
And Sima Shi's own uncle, Sima Fu, immediately seconds the choice. So Cao Mao it is.
And what about Cao Feng, the now former emperor?
The final ritual is quite moving, actually. He's shown weeping as he hands over the imperial seals. Then he's exiled, sent back to his old title, Prince of Qi. Stripped of everything.
And again, the narrative draws that parallel to Cao Cao and the Han Emperor, right?
Mm-hmm. The irony of Cao Cao, who bullied the Han's widows and orphans, now having his own descendant treated exactly the same way.
So enter the new emperor, Cao Mao. He's only 14 years old. What's his arrival like?
It's fascinating. He puts on this incredible display of humility, extreme humility.
Like what?
When officials come out to welcome him, he tries to bow to them. He refuses to ride in the fancy imperial carriage to enter the palace.
He walks.
He insists on walking. Says he's still just a subject until he knows why he's been summoned. And even when they formally offer him the throne, he repeatedly refuses it at first.
Okay, that level of deference. Is it genuine, do you think? Is he really that humble? Or is this a calculated move?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Is he just a genuinely modest 14-year-old, completely overwhelmed? Or is he incredibly shrewd? Does he understand immediately that he has zero power and needs to play the part perfectly to survive under Sima Shi?
Hard to know for sure. But either way, the outcome is the same in the short term. Sima Shi is firmly in charge.
Oh, absolutely. And the proof is in the rewards Cao Mao immediately grants Sima Shi once he's on the throne.
What kind of powers does he get?
It's an insane list. Unprecedented stuff. He gets the Yellow Axe, a symbol of supreme military authority. He gets permission to enter court without having to hurry.
Okay.
He doesn't have to state his name when addressing the throne. And get this, he's allowed to carry his sword inside the palace grounds. The very thing that signaled his disrespect to Cao Fang is now officially sanctioned.
So this confirms it, right? Sima Shi didn't just swap out emperors. He fundamentally changed the power structure. He installed a system where the emperor literally has to treat him as an equal, maybe even a superior.
Exactly. It's a puppet government, formalized. But, and this is crucial, did this brutal coup actually bring stability? Did it silence all opposition?
That's the next question. What does this mean for the immediate future? Does the terror campaign work?
Well, far from it, actually. The sheer violence and the, let's be honest, illegitimacy of the whole thing immediately stirred up more trouble.
Really?
If you look just ahead, the very next year, Zengyun II, two really important generals, Wu Qijian and Wang Qin, launch a massive rebellion.
Against Sima Shi.
Explicitly against Sima Shi, and specifically under the banner of restoring the emperor he just deposed, Cao Feng.
So the Sima dominance, born in this incredibly violent coup, is immediately challenged by a major civil war. It didn't bring peace at all.
Not immediately, no. It just kicked off the next round of conflict.